Michael, some folks here will know you. I wonder why. But for those who don't, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I'm from Belfast originally. I grew up on the outskirts of Belfast. Was brought up in Newton Breda Baptist Church. And at age 16, joined St. Fiel Road Presbyterian Church. Went to Queen's University, where I met Linda, who's now my wife. I had no idea when I met her at Queen's University she would end up being my wife, but Linda is a Mourne girl. And while at university, I really felt the beginnings of a strong sense of call to ministry, and went through the process, studied at Union, spent 6 years as part of the ministry team in First Antrim Presbyterian, and for the last 10.5 years I've been minister of Drumgooland and Kilkenny-Murray congregations, which are outside Rife Island, round the front of the mountains. That always goes down well in Mourne, doesn't it?
Yes. Well,
I should say, for the benefit of everybody here, when I'm on this side of the mountains, I'm generally known as that minister who's married to Noel Houston's daughter.
Somebody said to me just recently, Michael, actually, that whenever people from the other side of the mountain start that sort of caper, the reply is simply, someday do come to the kingdom of Mourne. And it's quite a kingdom. Michael, on a more sobering note, your family has been touched by tragedy and sadness through the Troubles. Would you mind sharing with us a little bit about your family and what happened?
My father was a member of the Royal Ulster Constabulary. I don't know if the picture is working or not.
Keep pushing.
There we go. My dad was in the police, and I thought that was a terribly exciting thing that my dad did. But I remember Mum speaking to me when I went to school, and she said, "You know, Michael, you can't tell anybody your dad's a policeman. Say to them your dad's a fireman," and that, you know, presumably explained in this strange sort of hours that he would work as well. Didn't fully understand that at that age now, but I did as I was told, and I didn't tell anybody that dad was a policeman. When I was 7 years old, it was a Sunday. Dad had just gone back to work. He'd had a week's leave, and he went back on duty that Sunday. It was the 28th of October, 1979. My dad was leaving. Maybe go on to the... Yep, there's me with Dad going to the next one. This was Dad's work. This was Springfield Road, RUC station, West Belfast. One of the most dangerous postings during the 1970s. And it was the sort of station where Dad couldn't drive there. He had to drive to another station, and then he was transferred by Land Rover and taken into Springfield Road. But Dad was leaving on patrol that Sunday afternoon, and as the Land Rover came out, gunfire erupted from a house overlooking the police station. The IRA had taken over that house earlier in the day. They'd waited until they got a good target, and they opened fire on Dad's Land Rover. There was a soldier in that Land Rover killed instantly. My father and the sergeant were severely injured, and the Land Rover immediately headed the short distance to the Royal Victoria Hospital. I came home from Sunday school that afternoon to find cars outside the house, strangers inside the house. Vividly remember seeing my mum sitting, crying in a chair, somebody had her arm around her, and a woman that I had never seen before in my life said to me, "Michael, you're going to have to be very brave. Your dad's had an accident." Dad had been critically injured. He'd been shot in the neck. He was on a life support machine for the next 3 weeks. And 3 weeks to the day, a Sunday again, the machine was switched off. And Mum came home that day, took me into a room, sat me down, and said to me, "Michael, your daddy's gone to heaven." I was 7. My sister was only 18 months. No memories, sadly, of her father. No one was ever charged with my father's murder. There's been no justice for us in a forensic sense as a family. As a family, we were one of the last families to receive a report from the historical inquiries team before it was wound up at the end of last year, and that report concluded what we already knew, that there was no new evidence that had come to light that could lead to a conviction.
Michael, obviously that tragedy will have affected your family, and it was absolutely devastating and heartbroken. How did you cope as a family, and how did it affect you as a young lad?
I think for myself, I mean, I was shielded in some ways from a lot of that because I was only seven. I wasn't at my dad's funeral. I don't know who took the decision, but the decision was taken that it would be best to send me away. There was obviously, because of the circumstances, because of the media attention, any time there was a funeral of a security force member. So I was sent away for 2 weeks to stay with friends in Dromore, County Down. When I came home, everything was over there. If it had happened in more recent years at age seven, I've no doubt that there would have been child psychologists there to talk to me and to counsel me, but there was nothing like that at that stage. And in many ways, you had to get on with things. It was extremely difficult for my mother. She was left then with two young children to raise, but my mum coped because of her Christian faith. My dad and my mum were both converted on the same night at a gospel meeting. And it was my mum's faith that really helped her cope, and the support of family and her church. And mum then was able to tell her own story. If we go on a couple of, on to the next one. Yep. Next one, sorry. Mum was able to tell her own story in one of Ben Ford's books. Ben Ford was an RUC man, a believer, who wrote a number of books during the Troubles, telling the stories of people like my mum. And in that book, she spoke very much of how her faith had supported her through that time. And even more than that, how her faith enabled her to reach out in Christian love and forgiveness, even to those who had caused my father's death.
And Michael, for yourself spiritually, how did all of this affect you?
I was very conscious, even at age seven, you know, when my mum told me my dad had gone to heaven, no difficulty believing that, was familiar with the gospel from an early age, and understood the basics of the gospel. But I became very conscious following that. You know, dad had gone to heaven, dad had been trusting in Jesus Christ, but it played in my mind. I knew if something was to happen to me, I wouldn't go to heaven because I hadn't put my trust in Jesus. And I was under conviction for some time. Understand that now, looking back on it. And something was said one Sunday night at Newton Rita Baptist by the pastor that hit home. And I remember it was in my mind a couple of nights when Mum was saying goodnight that I needed to tell her that I needed to become a Christian. And I put it off for a couple of nights, and then there came a night she was just about to leave and said, "Mum, I need to become a Christian." And I simply knelt down at my bed and asked Jesus to forgive my sins, asked Jesus into my heart. And I was crying, my mum was crying. And that then was the beginning of my Christian life.
Michael, I want to explore a wee bit. Like, you're no longer a seven or an eight-year-old.
No.
You're no longer a child. What has happened to you? Your father was murdered. Nobody was ever brought to justice for that. How have you as a family tried to deal with a situation that has been neither just nor fair? How do you reconcile your faith with, if you like, the unfairness of life?
Yeah. It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. But again, it is very much my faith that helps in that, because whenever I open the Bible, and especially when you turn to the Psalms and you turn to the prophets, you find them doing exactly the same thing. They are wrestling with what they believe about God. They're wrestling to connect that with what they see happening in society all around them. And when you open the scriptures, you find God's people wrestling with those injustices. I mean, you open the book of Habakkuk, which is one we studied in our congregations a couple of years ago, and Habakkuk begins with Habakkuk saying, "How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrong?" I mean, that could be somebody speaking about our society in Northern Ireland. And so you find people wrestling with that in the Bible. But you also find there in the Scriptures, you find a God who identifies with those who suffer injustice. You find a God of justice who has said, ultimately, the wicked will not go unpunished. And I suppose as a family, we hold on to that belief and that faith. We will not get justice in this life, but we believe in a God of justice, a God who has said, "It's mine to avenge, I will repay." So, I mean, that is something that I think helps there, is that faith and that understanding that ultimately justice will prevail. And I think, too, when you come into the Gospels and you read about Jesus, there you find somebody who endured, humanly speaking, the greatest of injustices. Somebody who had done no wrong, somebody who was guilty of no crime, was crucified like a common criminal. And so you find that God, our God, has not sheltered himself from the harsh realities of life on this earth. He's experienced that. But you also find that through that human injustice that Jesus suffered, God was at work and God was achieving his purposes, because there on the cross, God was working out his salvation and dealing with the problem of sin, which causes those injustices and those unfair circumstances that so many of us struggle with.
Michael, I want to just ask you a question, which is I feel a slightly delicate, sensitive question. I don't want to dwell too much on it, but it would seem inappropriate for us not to touch on it. And we live in a society where there are many victims. You are a victim, and I realize there's all sorts of perspectives on this. As a Christian man who lost your father, is there anything you would share with us as regards your own perspective on that delicate subject?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing I would say is I don't like to think of myself as a victim. Okay. I was speaking at a remembrance event in Riffra Island a few years ago, and I was using that language of victims. And I remember a man coming to me afterwards and just whispering into my ear, and he said, "You're not a victim, you're a survivor." And I think I prefer that terminology, because I think to say that I'm a victim some 34 years after my dad was killed is almost to suggest that those who brought that evil upon my family still have some power over me. Okay. And I won't accept that, and I won't live like that. As a family, we have survived. We'll never forget what has happened. It's with us all the time. It still hurts, even after all this time. But we got on with our life. We've not let what happened in the past prevent us from living in the present. And as a family, we find with God's grace, we've been able to move on. And we believe very much our lives were shaped by what happened that Sunday afternoon. But we believe God has worked in that for good in my life, in my mum's life, my sister's life, and the life of others in our family. In terms of the whole huge issue of the past, there are so many different views. And even here, I'm conscious there will be many different views, and not everybody will agree with mine, and I respect that, but it is my view. I think until we find a way as a society, we find some agreed approach on how to deal with the past, we're going to continue to be held prisoner by it. And I think the past is continuing to poison the present and the future, and I worry that if we don't find a way of dealing with it and drawing a line under it, it's infecting the next generation as well. And I don't want my children to grow up like that. I really don't. We've had to accept, painful as it is, that we're not going to see justice in this life. And I think if we're being realistic, I think a lot of folks need to accept that we're not going to see justice. If we lived in an ideal society, we would, but we don't. Compromises have been made. Dirty deals have been done in secret that have deprived folks of any hope of justice. And I think we've got to be realistic and say it's not going to happen for a lot of folks. But as I've said, we're content to leave that with God. I appreciate not everybody feels able to do that, but we are. And I think we've got to find an approach where everybody is treated the same. There's been a hierarchy of victims for a lot of years now, and often it seems security force casualties are at the bottom of that, and that has not been right. And there has to be an approach then that treats everybody the same, and I think it needs to be a time-limited approach. And I think folks have got to be given the choice whether they want to go down that route of pursuing justice or whether they want some kind of truth recovery process there. And I realize that, you know, maybe a lot of folks hearing that will disagree with that strongly, but that's my view. That's where we're coming from as a family.
Michael, thank you. Just at another tack, and because I'm sure that there are people in any gathering this size tonight who have also gone through the injustices and on the unfairness of life, and they may well be struggling with that, struggling to find some measure of healing, some measure of peace, struggling maybe at times with bitterness, dare I say. Where would you point them for some guidance with those struggles that are very common for many people?
I mean, I think in many ways all I can do, it sounds very simplistic, but I point people to Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I mean, as I say, in Jesus we've one who understands those struggles. We've one who was human as we are, who has experienced what we experience. And I think we only find peace and healing through the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we are called as believers, as followers of Jesus Christ, to follow the example of Jesus Christ. This was a man who prayed on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know what they do." This is a man who has said to us, we're to love our enemies, we're to pray for those who persecute us. Now, that's incredibly difficult, and it's only through the Holy Spirit at work in us that any of us can hope to do that. And as a believer of Jesus Christ, I trust in God's loving providence. I trust in God's purposes. I trust that there is a day coming where the Bible says God is going to make all things new. And for me, one of one of my favorite passages of the Bible, and I mean, I was reading it at the funeral of McClark of Session just on Tuesday this week, is Revelation 21, where it talks about how Jesus will make everything new. It talks about that new creation. It talks about how God will wipe every tear from our eyes, that there'll be no more death or mourning or sorrow or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. And that's what I hold on to, because I still know that pain. And sometimes that pain is still very difficult to deal with. But I look forward to that day, and I believe there's a day coming where God will wipe every tear from our eyes, that we will know that healing. And in the meantime, my experience, my pain, certainly I find in ministry, helps me to sit with people who are experiencing loss, who are experiencing suffering, who have maybe experienced traumatic loss, as we have, and to identify with them and to use that to minister to them.
Just finally, the 20 minutes have gone, Michael.
Have they? My goodness.
Yes, indeed. What would you say as a closing few words just to anyone who is here tonight? And I'm sure there are people who still in their heart of hearts are just saying, look, life has been so unfair and even cruel. What would you say to those people again, just from your own experience, just as a closing summary?
I would say again, and I believe this with all my heart, I really do, because I've seen it in my life. I've seen it in my family's life. I've seen it in the life of others. Even in the midst of the unfairness of life, even in the midst of those injustices, God is there and God is at work. I've no doubt about that. And God is at work in that bringing, working out his good purposes. And I'm convinced that there's nothing, no matter how cruel, no matter how unfair, no matter how tragic, that God is not able to take and to turn that around and to use it ultimately for the good of his people and for his glory. And it was I was struck again when I lifted this book tonight. It's been out of print for a long time. Some of you may have it lying around somewhere. I picked up an old second-hand copy on Amazon not so long ago, but just a wee strap line here under the title, Love and Bomb City, it says this: in the moments of greatest darkness and danger, God's love is triumphant. I believe that's true. I've seen that in the life of my own family. I've seen it in the lives of other people. And that's what I would say. I mean, I constantly go back to that verse in Romans 8, where Paul says, we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Now, we'll not always see and understand that fully in this life, but I know, looking back over my life and the journey that I've come on, my family have come on, we can see how God has worked, and we can see something of God's plans and purposes in that, and bringing good out of evil.
Michael, our time has gone, but thank you so much for being willing. It's not easy to sit in front of a group of people and open your heart a little bit about some very sensitive and very personal things. Thank you so very much, and let's show our appreciation to Michael.
I'll be about if anybody wants to talk to me afterwards.
Michael was saying, as we said at the beginning, he will be going at the end to the door with Albert, and I would be surprised if there maybe weren't a few people who you would like a chat with Michael. If he's not at the door that you're going to, well, go over and chat with him, and he'd be more than happy to speak with you. Thank you very much.